Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, friends.
Ah, I see. We have the abbreviated intro from Steve, which means we have a guest, and a guest we do indeed have. We have Joe Varai from SB Nation, the Warriors affiliate Golden State of Mind is with us today. Joe, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing great. And for the first time in Dunker Spot history, the Warriors are interesting enough to be included in a deep dive in the pod. So I am very interested to talk about Dubs basketball, especially considering last night's events, and just talking about Dubs ball in general. So happy to be here, excited to be here, and it's an honor.
We're glad to have you, too. You're going to be getting an email or a DM from a friend of the program, Marcus Thompson, at some point, but that is okay. You know, it's going to be all right. But no, we're glad to have you here. You're someone that I've been following for quite a bit. People ask me pretty often, like, hey, how do you keep up with XYZ? And it's like, you know, beyond my own watching, all the work that I do with Steve, the advice I've been giving for years now, even before the pod, was find 3-4 people for every team that you trust so that if you aren't able to catch their game, you can at least get a feel for what's happening before you do your own deep dive. Because obviously you don't want to just take someone else's opinions. But get some people that you trust so you can at least maintain some semblance of a pulse, because following all 30 teams is not easy. And so if you have people that you can trust, that at least gives you a vantage point, like, okay, let me watch this game. This is what they said. Let me see if this vibes with what I see. And it's either going to be the same or you'll feel something differently. But you are certainly one of those folks for the Warriors that I pay attention to. Your play breakdowns are great. Before we actually get into, you know, quick news updates and then get into a Warriors deep dive, how did you get into this business? What sparked the love for breaking down film the way that you do?
To make a very, very long story somewhat short, you know, obviously we all started playing the game. And I played it when I was real, like practically every day when I was younger. And then it evolved into watching the NBA because, you know, like my dad instilled that love of the NBA to me. And, you know, just everyone got into the NBA for different reasons, whether it's because of the highlights, the flashy stuff, the dunks, the dribble moves, the handles. Me, I just really got this fascination for watching whatever happens off the ball. Even before pre-Steph Warriors, I had this fascination of what was happening. Like, why is that dude screening for that guy in the corner? Or why is this dude just moving around? Or maybe just standing around in the corner? Like, what is he expecting to happen? And, you know, that kind of differentiated me from my other peers. Like, hey, like, Why do you think that's exciting? It's like, I don't know. It really just spoke to me, like, what did people do off the ball? And then I thought nothing of it until I decided to get into the analysis writing field. And, you know, when I started, like, I didn't really have that much of an trained eye, even though I did watch a lot of the off-ball stuff. But, it, you know, as I kept watching more and more in games, not just the Warriors, you know, grew up a Warriors fan, but then expanded into other teams. Like, hey, these, like, I've never seen this before. I've never seen that from him. And then I kept watching and watching until I eventually got, like, a pretty good sense of what all the other 29 teams were doing. And then I was like, hey, this is something that I could do. And, you know, a pretty close friend of mine said, hey, you know, you write well, and why don't you combine your passion with your talent? And here I am, years later, and never thought I would enter into this field, but someone told me I was good at it and gave it a shot. And now I'm here with you guys in the Dunker Spot. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to talking more about basketball with two of you, because you guys are pretty similar to what I want to talk about and what I'm passionate about in terms of basketball.
Oh, well, I like that. I like that. I will say, certainly a fun time to enter the business, but that's a whole nother podcast we get into. But no, I definitely feel that. Like, for me, and I've told this story a bunch of times, it's the natural, I love watching basketball, I love playing basketball. Oh, wait, I'm not going to make the NBA. I want to find a way to stay connected to this in some kind of way, but I still had the fascination for hoops. So watched a bunch, read a bunch, you know, just surfing YouTube to learn different stuff. eventually hopping on Twitter and bugging Steve every two business days about play names and things. And now we have the podcast together. So I just find it so fulfilling and fun just to learn about basketball and then being in a position to convey that love and also just what I've learned and what we've learned. I think it's a really special thing. It's a lot of fun.
I think it helps too that at an early age, you don't know that you're going to make it to the NBA. Like, hey, might as well just, or let alone at like the college level. I mean, Steve was like UNLV, and then he's way up there compared to the rest of us. And me, I'm like, you know, I can't even get past that dude in high school who's like 5'11", who has good handles and like me. Okay, I'll just stick to watching it. I'll just stick to film. I'll just stick to being a keyboard warrior.
A keyboard warrior. Steve, your thoughts?
What?
No, I'm just kidding. No, I love catching.
I can hoop better than y'all. What you mean?
Oh, there you go. That's all we needed. Like, hi, we got some Steve Flowers on the pod. He can't run away from me. Can't hit us with, I'm just a guy. That's right. You did this.
I am, though.
Debatable. Anyway.
There's levels.
We'll get to some quick news items. Some injury news. LaMelo Ball suffered a right ankle sprain recently. He is out indefinitely, which obviously stinks for him and also the Hornets, who have been on a bit of a skid. And some positive news. It was announced earlier this week, Jamal Murray and CJ McCollum-Pershams expected to make their returns at some point this week. It looks like as we record early on a Wednesday for the Thursday release, so we're not going to get the Wednesday slate naturally. But it looks like CJ McCollum will be making his return against Philadelphia on Wednesday night, so that's cool. Jamal Murray looking later in the week, maybe Friday for him. So we will keep an eye on what that does for their teams. And then a very quick in-season tournament update as that play wrapped up last night, again, recording on a Wednesday. We have games set up for the following week. The Elite Eight is set. The top-seeded Lakers taking on the fourth-seeded Suns. The second-seeded Kings taking on the third-seeded Pelicans in the West. And in the East, we have the Bucks and the Knicks in the 1-4 matchup. And we have the Pacers and the Celtics in the 2-3 matchup. I am excited. Very quickly, I'll start with you, Steve. Which matchup are you most excited for between these?
Pacers-Celtics. Gotcha. Probably gets the nod for me. No disrespect to, like, Lakers-Suns, but, like, I want to see what the Pacers look like in that matchup. And especially this current version of Boston, trying to find some things, some injuries. Can they keep the pace? Last time, Boston delivered a message. So, we'll see what happens this time.
Got you. Joe, what about you?
I was looking forward to Knicks-Bucks. You know, something about the Knicks fascinates me always, about how, you know, Thibs is one of my, like, you know, favorite coaches to watch in terms of just watching him do his thing on the sideline. And the Knicks are an interesting team this year, and also the Bucks too, because of all the talk about how they're struggling on defense, the Damian Lillard Giannis partnership. So I'm really looking forward to how the two of those styles mesh together.
I am probably with the Kings and the Pelicans, just because the Kings finally getting healthier and they seem to be rolling with De'Aaron Fox back in tow. And I just want to see what the Pelicans throw out there in terms of their lineups as they get healthier. They've been a really interesting team to track. And then just with that matchup, with De'Aaron Fox playing the way that he has, who gets the Fox matchup? We're going to see a lot of Herb, I would imagine. Dice is going to get a crack. Jose Alvarado's back, I'm sure. If they match up minutes, they're going to see that. Like, that's just going to be a fun point of attack battle. So I'm really excited for that one. Let's now talk about a team that is not in the Elite Eight. Sorry to say, we will segue on to the Golden State Warriors, who, as of recording, are 8-10, holding on to the last play-in spot in the West right now. 3-6 at home, 5-4 on the road, which a little bit of a reversal from what we saw last year. Per clean in the glass, which filters out garbage time, they are 14th in offense, they are 15th in defense, 17th in net rating right now. Joe, we'll start with a general question as we do with all our team dives. What were your preseason expectations for his Warrior group, and how does that kind of balance with what you've seen so far?
Well, you know, like, when you consider the roster moves they made, you know, their thought process was we're going to get more adults in the room, and they probably got the biggest adult in the room that they could get in Chris Paul, and in return they punted someone who helped them win a championship, someone who they developed internally in Jordan Poole. And, you know, going into this season, the theme for me was maturity. The theme to me was ball security. and overall just having someone who knew what they were doing and could calm things down. And, you know, I never expected them to be in that absolute top echelon of the league, you know, the Nuggets, the Celtics. But I, like, you know, as Zach Lowe said, the inner circle of contenders where they had a shot if they just got a fourth seed or a third seed finish in the West. Mm-hmm. And the concerns about, you know, the size, concerns about the age, the speed, yeah, lack of athleticism across the board, they were valid, but you kind of expected them to have the institutional knowledge, the experience to overcome all of those limitations. And, you know, who could blame them, because they've won four championships in the past. And you know that no matter, like, they'd find an answer no matter what. Mm-hmm. And so far, like, of course, they've had injuries to deal with. They've had the 5-game suspension of Draymond to deal with. But so far, the preseason expectations haven't really met the reality of the situation. On both ends of the floor, they're as average you can get in terms of league average efficiency. And the direction that they're going is not great. They're not trending up. They're actually trending down as every game passes. So, and all of that despite having, you know, Steph Curry, top three, or it depends on your opinion, top three, top four, top five. Basically someone who can get you there, who can get you to the promised land, given the correct pieces around him. And there's only so much that you can prepare for. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about this later on, but there were some things that they could have done better, and also some things that, you know, I would say that they didn't expect coming and that no team could prepare for going into the season.
They've been such a weird team for me to watch so far this year. And I was looking at my, because Steve and I do like a season predictions pod before the season starts every year. So I went back in my notes this morning to see where did I have Golden State, because I knew I was relatively high on them. I had them getting a top four seed in the regular season. And so, like, I kind of felt, you add Chris Paul, you cut down some of the turnovers, like, you're going to lose a little bit of juice, I think, in terms of the speed that you play with. Like, there's just going to be certain trade-offs with playing Chris Paul because of the style that he has. But, like, I feel like you get some internal development from some of the younger guys. You get a great season from Steph. Like, they should be up there at the West. And then from there, it's the matchup game. And they would have as good a chance as anyone to make, like, a super deep run because of the court they have. And so it's still early. Like, we haven't reached December yet, but it's enough of a sample to say, like, this feels more rickety than I anticipated it feeling. Like, I think some of the stylistic shifts with Chris Paul in tow, like, they've made sense. They are running a little bit more pick and roll this year than last year, but they still aren't a high volume pick and roll club. They're not going to completely change who they are just because Chris is there. So, like, you've seen those changes defensively, like, still trying to find the right blend of, you know, the athleticism that you talked about, trying to find the right size, but also having enough balance on the other end to where you can feel good lineups. And I think that's kind of been the big thing that stood out for me with Golden State. They don't seem to be, even though, like, you look at the efficiency numbers, 14th, 15th, they're right in the middle. They don't seem to have real balance. And, like, I thought some of the top end stuff would be good enough to where that part wouldn't matter as much as it has so far this year. And then obviously you throw in, like, the Draymond suspension and cold start from the wings. We'll definitely get into that. Now you go back to the Kings game from last night, which a wild finish to that one. But now you're looking at a Chris Paul and Gary Payton second injury, and we don't know how long those two guys are going to be out. It just feels like they've been searching for the right two-way balance with their lineups. And you get it in spurts, but they haven't really found those answers yet. And I don't know how much of this is just, okay, they're under 500 right now, but it's early. They're figuring it out. When they do figure it out, they have this high ceiling. Or as we get deeper into this, did I kind of misjudge what their ceiling was? Or did I misjudge what their floor was because of some of the balance issues that have kind of piped up?
Yeah, that's totally fair. And, you know, you alluded to the wings, the play of the wings. And I don't think anyone expected Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson to slump, not only slump, but slump at the same time, pretty much. Mm. And, you know, the Warriors have always been a team that relied heavily on their wings because, you know, their high switchability. They need wings to be two-way, basically, and hit those shots on the offensive end. And, you know, they haven't been doing that until recently. And so when you have that kind of production from your most versatile players, like, you can't really, like, I don't know how you account for that. You just hope that they'll play better, basically, because, you know, this, the Warrior, like, in terms of the switching, you know, Andrew Wiggins historically has been really, really up there in terms of defending, like, I would say 1 through 4, like, going higher, he's, like, he can't really, he has trouble with that, but you can count on him to switch 1 through 4. Clay, you know, he's not really that kind of player anymore in terms of defending quicker guards, but you could count on him to be really, really dependable when it comes to guarding higher, like larger threes and fours, sometimes even fives. But yeah, you know, the Warriors couldn't really account for those happening. And, you know, I don't blame them for that. It's just a matter of, you know, if they're like, the moment they play better, the Warriors are going to be a better team as a whole. And you saw flashes of that yesterday in the first half where Wiggs and Clay, they had a pretty, like, as like pretty much the best first halves of their season so far. And, you know, and the result was, you know, they were blowing the Kings out and they looked like they were going to blow it wide open until, yeah, until all the shenanigans happen after. So the usual stuff, the fouls, the turnovers, and, you know, that's a problem that's been there ever since. And, you know, they put an emphasis on correcting those faults. And so far, it seems like nothing's working to correct those. And maybe they will never correct those because that's who they are. And for all their faults, the lack of size and athleticism, they're going to foul a lot. And, you know, the way they play, the motion offense, they pass the ball a lot, they move a lot, and there's bound to be a lot of miscommunication, and they're going to turn over the ball a lot. So maybe that's just who they are at this point.
I got a question for y'all.
What's up?
How much of this is, and I go back to my preseason thoughts, I thought Chris Paul going to help, second unit will be more balanced, got a clear runway for the young guys. It's pretty clear what you want to do. What is their best lineup? What is their best second unit lineup? What is their best rotation? Do we have those answers? Think about that. Now think about this. What is their best scheme defensively? How much scheme versatility do they have? How much of that is Draymond being missed? Or Saric can switch one night, he can't switch the other night. Looney can kind of do this. We know what he can do, but we're getting beat off the bounce over here. How much of that plays into it? But also, I go back to that start of the season. 6-2. It felt like, hey, the Warriors have a higher ceiling than maybe I thought. Mm-hmm. And it's just fallen apart from there. And for me, it's like, okay, is it just Clay and Wiggins need to shoot better? Like, is this just the worst case scenario where these guys are just shooting terrible at the worst possible time? Could it be that, oh, the second unit is fixed, except teams have decided, hey, switch Chris Paul under Chris Paul. What are we running with the second unit now? Oh, no. Wait, our defense has disappeared. We are turning the ball over. It feels like a rotating wheel to where we should be at a point where, okay, it's one or two things that the Warriors can't do. I think the problem is we could probably point to like 4 or 5.
Yeah, like it's a lot to sort through with this group. And I think the absences just make it worse. Because, like, again, Draymond, very early absence, and then you get the big suspension. Like, if everyone was healthy and we had these issues, I think it'd be easy to point to, okay, this just isn't working. This is why it's bad. And then we can kind of parse through, okay, how much better can it get, or do they need to make a change with whatever asset pool they have left? But because of these absences, I still find myself wanting to just give them time to settle into whatever they think their best rotation is and then try to judge it from there. But I feel like by the time we get there, it may just be January, which still gives you a nice portion, you know, leading into All-Star break in the second half of the year. But, like, that's a lot of season to, like, quote-unquote punt on or be in wait-and-see mode, especially when you look at Denver's dealt with the Jamal Murray injury, but, like, they're still the 2 seed. OKC's been very good. Minnesota's been very good. And you have all these teams, like Sacramento getting healthier. They've been good. I don't want them to fall too far behind while trying to sort through this kind of stuff. I'm looking at them in the 10th seed. Oh, the Clippers are 11th, and like they've won more games than they've lost over this recent stretch. So like I would imagine they're going to enter the play-in/playoff picture soon. It's just weird.
Could the schedule have been worse for them to try and figure things out? And this is not Bale adjacent, but you went at Denver, home against Cleveland, two games against Minnesota, who is clearly pretty good, two games against Oklahoma City, who also is clearly pretty good. You play Houston, you win. You go to Phoenix. You play San Antonio, you win. You go to Sacramento, and you lose. Now, obviously, you don't want to lose to all of the teams that are pretty good, but does that play a role? Does that play a factor? Is that a thought? Or is that, hey, they are far behind?
I'll go quick so we can get Joe back in here. But like, I would say like the schedule certainly plays a factor. And again, with the absences that they've had to deal with, it's made it harder to parse through. Because it's just like, this is a good team already. And so it's probably going to be a battle for you anyway. You take out your literal defensive fulcrum in Draymond Green. Like, yeah, it may be a little bit difficult to deal with OKC. It may be difficult to deal with some of these other teams when you don't have Draymond to quarterback things or just to take on some of those matchups. Like, I think back to, what was it? I think the second OKC matchup. Like, I remember watching that game and quickly thinking, like, back to the, I think, the conference finals matchup with Dallas. And it's like, huh, remember when Draymond just had Jalen Brunson? It'd be pretty cool if Golden State could just come out and say, yeah, actually, Dre, we want you on Shea. Let's see if we can just try to cut off some of these drives early and see what that does on the back end and see how that simplifies things for everyone else. And, like, not even being able to experiment with something like that, it's just like, I know they probably would think about it at least if this team was healthy. But, like, we don't even get to see that. And so it helps that it's cool to get some of these better games out of the way. And now maybe you get an easier slate. And as you work through what your rotation is going to be, like, maybe you can rack up some wins from there and then feel better. So I think it's certainly worth considering. That's my spiel. Joe, where are you at?
I agree. The schedule plays a non-insignificant part in it. But yeah, I mean, like, when you look at the play itself on the court in terms of what Steve mentioned about the defensive versatility, for example, to me, it feels like they're kind of just grasping for whatever can work at any particular moment in a certain game. It has felt more reactive than it has been proactive. If you catch my drift, like, for example, in the first Minnesota game where Ant Edwards cooked them, Kevon Looney was playing somewhat of a drop coverage on ball screens against Ant. And as a result, Ant was going to his spots easily, you know, knocking down shots, going to the rim. And, you know, when a drop coverage usually doesn't allow rotation to happen, keep it on 2v2. But, you know, the Warriors are really, really reactive and really, really, you know, they react so easily to breakdowns at the point of attack where you're forced to have Chris Paul or Steph Curry rotate from the weak side because, you know, whoever was at the point of attack got beat. And so when you look at the following game, the second Minnesota game where it was an IST game, now they changed the coverage. It's Kevon Looney, kind of like a soft hedge up to the level of the screen against Ant Edwards. And it worked. Ant turned the ball over more. He passed the ball more. And, you know, from the perspective of limiting Ant, it worked. But then Cat blew up. And so, you know, from that perspective, there's only so much that they could do in terms of coverage decisions and coverage adjustments because they're facing these talented teams. When you take away one option, the other one steps up, in the case of Ant and Cat. But then also, you kind of just go, they're kind of just trying to look for answers, trying to look for which coverages will work, which base they'll go with. And, you know, one game, it could be they're icing ball screens toward the sideline. And one game, they're kind of giving up middle penetration. And they're just trying everything. They're trying to adjust and constantly looking for answers. And, you know, some of it's working and some of it's not. So they're kind of just wading in deep waters, trying to look for the surface and trying to keep themselves from drowning. And it feels like, you know, they're shuffling through everything that they have at this point. And, you know, from the perspective of it being early, it's an early season, they can do that. Sure. But they're 8-10. They're going to have more people sidelined, I'm assuming. And at what point does it feel like, oh, we know what we're going to do? Is it too late, though? Because we rattled off these early season, early season matchups. And, you know, you're a good team if you at least can get a couple of these wins against these good teams. And so far, they haven't. You know, they came close against the Nuggets. They got a win in OKC. But other than that, you know, they're having trouble against these good teams. And yes, there's this school of thought where, you know, they're facing these good teams with not their rotation not really settled because of all these early absences. But at the same time, you kind of establish who you are early on in the season because of the teams you beat. And so far, they haven't passed that test for me yet.
It really has felt, like I said a little bit earlier, like it's felt kind of unbalanced, a little bit rickety on both ends. Like the defense is where that's kind of popped the most for me. And that's where you really feel this hasn't been the best Andrew Wiggins season defensively. And they've kind of needed him to be that tone setter defensively on the perimeter. And if he is having some of these miscues with switches or he just isn't containing the same way, who are you giving that responsibility to? Like, it's not going to be Steph, especially at this stage of his career. And you don't want him to take on that role anyway. It's not going to be Chris Paul when he was in the starting lineup. It hasn't really, you haven't been able to trust Klay in that kind of capacity this year. And it's probably unfair to ask him to do that at this stage of his career. In an ideal world, if you kind of zoom out past this year and just kind of the buildup with some of the young guys, you kind of hope that Jonathan Kuminga, he grows enough to where maybe you can insert him more to take on some of those roles. It's been uneven for him. And so, like, as Joe was talking about them in a drop, sometimes having Kamon Looney at the level, like, the bigs have so much more to worry about because the containment at the top just isn't there. And I don't know how much of that is fixable with the current personnel. Or, like, I don't know how many tweaks you can make to that versus pressing the do better button. Which, depending on which side of the coin you land on, you either feel good, like, okay, Klay's getting back into rhythm, he should be okay. Or Andrew Wiggins obviously has the capacity to do more, he should be fine. Or, if we're having these questions now, I don't feel good about the long-term prospects. But it just kind of depends on how you feel about Golden State right now. But, like, the perimeter defense just hasn't really been up to snuff. And as Joe mentioned a little bit earlier, that gets into some of the foul stuff, which further complicates what rotation decisions you have to make. If some of these guys are just picking up two or three fouls and a half, now you have to dig deeper in. And that's before just getting into the curve of it all. As I follow a lot of folks on Warriors Twitter, they do not seem to be very happy with Steve Kerr this year, which isn't new for any team with their fan base. It feels like there are two fan bases on Twitter that may be happy with their head coaches. And even then, you still get the snipes on why isn't this guy playing, etc. It's just been weird. It's just been weird.
Well, I got a question because y'all both mentioned something and I found it interesting. So you were talking about the point of attack defense, Wiggins. Joe was mentioning earlier about the help defense. So which one is more important for them to fix? Because the one thing when I look at the Warriors, you don't feel them defensively to the same degree. It is a lot of, I am with my person, but there is space between us. There is movement. There is space between us. If someone gets beat, look at the closeouts the Warriors end up having to make because they're just watching the ball. And now, oh no, I need to recover. The rotations that used to be automatic, they're kind of getting there, but they're one person behind because it's like one person goes, then the next person goes, and the other person's like, wait, wait, oh, I need to get to the corner. Ah, how important is it for them to fix that versus just purely, hey, Wiggs got to be better? Because it just feels like there is distance between them and whoever they are guarding, and offenses are just leading the dance, and I don't know if that's the bit.
Joe, what say you?
Yeah, to me, I think everything starts at the point of attack because, you know, it's just a matter of Wiggins or whoever's guarding the ball handler being better. Like, to me, like, you know, like historically, they're a team who's pretty heavy on being in rotation anyway. Like, even if you play in a job, that weak side guy, the low man, he's gonna come in and he's gonna pinch in and cover the role man. But to me, you know, it's always at the point of attack where, you know, you had Andrew Wiggins navigating the screens, staying on someone's hip. And of course, the low man may just pinch in anyway, but it's the matter of the recovery distance being shorter because the ball handler is someone has Wiggs on him, putting pressure on him to make that pass. And now they're expecting that to go to the corner or go to the slot. And they can account for that much better. But now when, for example, Wiggs gets caught up in the screen or he can't stay in front, then that means that whoever's on the weak side and whoever the next rotation is, they have to pinch in earlier. And so to me, it's just a matter of the timing. If the point of attack defense is there, they can probably control the help, how they close out, who they close out to, and who doesn't have to help. But then when you get beat at the point of attack, then, oh, you got someone helping off the strong side corner because no one's there to contain in front. And now you've got one pass away problems. Or, you know, you've got, like what I mentioned earlier, Chris Paul and or Steph as the low man because they're usually the ones hidden on whoever's on the corner on the weak side. And then now they've got to make the long closeouts and they're not really affecting that much because, you know, they're not really the tallest of defenders. And so to me, it's just a matter of execution. And all of that starts at the point of attack for me.
I probably lean towards the point of attack. I mean, I guess to your general question, Steve, like, I think the answer is just yes. Like, the help does have to be better. Like, even if the point of attack cleans up, those help lapses have still just been there. And so, like, that portion of it has to clean up almost regardless. If I'm ranking which one's more important for me, I probably lean towards Joe. Like, I do think the point of attack defense has been, like, it's been underwhelming in my watches with Golden State. And I think some of the issues that they have, like Joe mentioning Steph or Chris Paul guarding some of the guys in the corner to take them away from those more difficult matchups, like some of that's just going to be inherent to the scheme. Like there are just going to be limitations to, if we don't want Chris Paul to guard this guy, he has to defend this player. He's going to be here, which means if they configure a pick and roll to go to this direction, he's just going to have to make that rotate. He's going to have to tag, have to draw a foul, use his hands to get a swipe or whatever the case may be. We just got to bake some of that in. I don't think they can afford to bake that portion of it in. And also, Andrew Wiggins has gone from a 90th percentile perimeter defender to a 62nd percentile perimeter defender. Now, I'm just throwing a number out there. I'm not citing anything. But, like, they can't account for slippage up top. And also, the only thing that could change there is Andrew Wiggins can be better. They can't make Chris Paul taller. They can't make Steph Curry taller. And so I think if you're able to limit some of the miscues up top, the drives are more closely defended. To Joe's point, the help doesn't have to help as much as they do, or it doesn't become putting out a bunch of fires every other possession with some of the smaller help that they have on the court. And I think you can make things a little bit easier for everyone else if you can contain that. Contain the drives better. Don't get yourself in foul trouble, which then, again, messes up your rotation. You potentially get even smaller if you're going for, like, Andrew Wiggins to Moses Moody, and then further accentuating what size problems you may have. I think if you're better up top, it should kind of trickle down everywhere else.
Well, it's interesting because you guys mentioned the lack of personnel they have. So you would assume if you can contain the drive and if you need the help, you're better at the help, you probably win, right?
Mm-hmm.
But alas, continue.
It's just been... the problem's just yes for this Golden State defense.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so, like, yeah. I'm with you. Like, I don't think the help portion of it should be ignored. Because again, like, I do think there are just some size limitations baked in with some of the stuff. But even then, you can be in your area earlier to make the closeout easier for yourself versus creeping in to help. Skip is made because the containment is bad up top. And now you're working back out to the closeout. And your closeout is late and you're small. And now it's just a double problem. And now it's a corner three giving up or another drive that somebody else has to rotate behind you. And it's just a big chain of nothingness defensively. So I do think that part's important. If I can flip quickly back to the offense real quick, because Joe, you mentioned part of the frustration with this Golden State group is that they've had these middling results so far while they still have the guy in Stephen Curry, who we probably should talk a little bit about the turnovers. We can get into that. But like zooming out with Steph, he has been phenomenal. Shade under 30 points per game this year. 55% on twos, 44% from three on very high volume. Career low on assists, but a career high in free throw attempts. So that's been interesting. A question for you, Joe. How have you felt about Steph's usage this year?
It's kind of what I expected when they got Chris Paul, because the expectation was for Chris Paul for kind of be a more responsible Draymond on the court in terms of, you know, you're going to have low turnovers, you're going to have more risk averse decisions. And, you know, you can see that in how Steph's been used this year. He's off the ball more. You know, he's running around without the ball. The age old argument that is Steph really a point guard or is he really a shooting guard? Well, this year he's been more of a two guard to me. I think it's been fine to me when I look at the tape. But then, you know, there's this argument also where you have to have him off on the ball more. And Steph's always been the kind of guy who, like, especially with how Wiggins and Clay have been playing, he's always been the kind of guy to try to get his teammates going. And I think that plays a part in how he's being used or how he wants to be used this year, where, okay, I'm fine running around. I'm fine using my pull to get my guys open. Mm-hmm. And especially with how Wiggins and Clay have been shooting, I think that's been more pronounced. And when you combine that with how Chris, especially with Draymond's absence, is kind of been more counted on to be a traditional playmaker, then yeah, you get Steph, more off-ball Steph, more him just trying to get the whole half-court offense going. And there's also some, like, a balancing act with that in terms of, oh, like, is Steph going to be ready when he has to have more on-ball reps, more ball screens at the end of games? And to me, he's handled that fine. It's just that, when do we start counting on Steph? Do we only go to ball screens more if, you know, you were down 5 with only 3 minutes to go in the fourth? Or do we go much earlier than that? Because to me, I think Steph has handled, like, I don't think Steph is, it doesn't look like he's worn down, because his minutes distribution has been really, really, you know, it's been handled pretty well. He's not playing high minutes. So I think for me, it's just, you know, it's like Warriors fans have argued this endlessly. It's just that the balancing act between, hey, Steph, you're our only shot creator, only self-creator on the team, pretty much, because Clay, you know, Clay draws 2 to the ball, but that's mostly when him going off pin downs off the ball. Wiggins, yeah, he can create his own shot, but that handle kind of limits him to a certain extent. Steph, you're the only one who can create your own shot consistently. So when do you go to him for that? And when are you fine just with him trying to get the others going for me? And I think that's a problem that's always been kind of there, but to me it's been more pronounced this season, especially now that they're in trouble early.
Got you. I got 2 things on that. Just very quickly to put some numbers on some of the Steph stuff. I was coming off of screens, coming off about nearly 27 off-ball screens per 100 possessions this year. That's up from 18 last year. In terms of pick and roll volume, about 36, almost 37 per 100 possessions last year. It's down to 33 this year. So you're seeing a little bit of the dip there in terms of pick and roll volume. The other thing that's come to mind for me when watching Steph and kind of tracking what that balance is, to your point, like, there is like a situational balance, I think, that Golden State needs to find. With, even if you don't want to bump up the overall pick and roll numbers, let's at least, you know, 6 in the first, 8 in the second, 6 in the third, the rest in the fourth, and kind of simplify things and get 2 to the ball and play out of that. Because to your point, Joe, like, he is the guy that can consistently draw 2 to the ball on and off the ball. Whereas Clay, it's more so off the ball. Andrew Wiggins, you may get the extra help defender if he's posting up a point guard. And you just have to try to bail that guy out of there. But ultimately, he's not someone that's going to consistently draw 2 to the ball. The other thought that I had with the Steph usage, in terms of off ball and on ball in particular, is how much of this is dictated by them not having a trustworthy roller. And, like, this is just a thought that I'm having.
Kevon Looney slander?
It's not even Kevon Looney slander. Because, like, I trust Draymond both of them
Green
to make...
Draymond Green slander?
Not even that. I asked this, like, in the traditional sense of, we want Steph to run 60 of these a game. And trust that both of those bigs can not only make plays in the short roll, which they can do, but can also finish. Okay. And, like, you've noted, like, Draymond being more aggressive as a finisher. he's never been like a high volume finisher in those situations. And Kevon Looney, there is just a limitation in terms of him like being ground bound. Like you don't want to run like 20 pick and rolls with him as like your primary scoring option in that regard. So like through that lens, obviously they've functioned well in like those 4-3 situations. But like I look at that and then zoom out to, you know, more so with Chris Paul, but like how much of the pick and rolls are becoming switches with Golden State. And I wonder if that's part of the thinking for Steve Kerr is like, okay, if I'm going to use Draymond as a screener for Steph, if I'm going to use Kevon Looney as a screener for Steph, it makes more sense to utilize those guys off the ball versus on the ball, because we might have a better chance at drawing to and having something more fruitful out of it. And again, I could just be galaxy braining it, but like that's a thought that I had as I was like trying to parse through. Maybe this is why we have some of the split.
I got a thought for y'all. You ready?
Okay.
In my head, I thought, let's slide some of that pick and roll stuff. Chris Paul, you do that. Mm-hmm. We need to get back to what we do offensively. We need to get this movement back up. We can always get back to Steph and pick and roll. But we need to establish this base and get things moving and get back to what we do to a degree. So I feel like some of the stuff they've kept in their back pocket, right or wrong, at least in my head, that's where I'm reading it. And I felt like, okay, if more of the pick and roll stuff is going to be Chris Paul, with whoever he plays with, whether it's first unit, second unit, let's let that kind of just be his thing to a degree. Mm-hmm. And then we can kind of blend and mix. Because one of the things early that popped for me with Chris Paul was, oh, they can do the movement, and if nothing works, oh, now Chris Paul can run pick and roll. So that's where in my head I was like, oh, okay, I think I see what they're trying to do. But now the lineups have gone up and down all over the place. And so I just feel like it's a decision to just kind of split it back to this back pocket, end of quarter, fourth quarter type deal. But I'll throw that out and let y'all hoop it up.
No, that makes sense. Again, like this is just a secondary thought that I had. It's like, huh, I wonder if this is part of it. Because like as we talked about at the top, you bring Chris Paul in, like you're just going to shift to more pick and roll naturally because that's just what he does. You don't have Chris Paul coming off a bunch of pin downs. That's not what he does. Not that he can't shoot, but that's never been his style. And so you zoom out overall. Again, pick and roll volume is up for Golden State from last year. And, you know, in conjunction with that, Chris Paul's getting a lot of those reps. Kind of goes down for Steph so far this year. And so just trying to parse through what some of the secondary reasons for that may be, aside from we got somebody else to do that. The other thing that I wonder about with Steph's usage, I guess it's less a usage deal than just a general Steph deal. It kind of goes back into the turnover thing for me, as Steph has kind of racked him up as of late. Is that another reason why you want him more off the ball versus on the ball? Does that factor in at all for you, Joe? Or is that just random? This just comes with Steph?
I think it just comes with Steph.
Gotcha.
Like in the sense that Steph is the offense, he is the identity. In that same manner, Steph is going to always have that high wire act where he's going to make the big plays and he's going to make mistakes along the way. And, you know, Steph's small and he's always getting aggressive coverages around ball screens, and he's going to have a lot of length on him at all times. And he's going to throw those passes in traffic and passing lanes where the window might not be there. And also because of his height, he thinks that those windows are there, but they close quickly because, yeah, like he doesn't see all the arms that are in the passing lanes. And so I think for me, yeah, you would want him to cut down on the turnovers, but it's just this high risk, high reward thing that the Warriors have always been banking on in terms of their offense. So I don't know how much you can change that out of him. To me, I don't think there's a discernible difference between him being on versus off the ball. Because especially when you've got Draymond next to you, who's also another kind of like pretty high risk, high reward kind of passer, where, you know, you saw that last night with the turnover with Klay. He makes those gambles because he wants his guys to be open. But then when you're not on the same level, those things happen. And, you know, for a team that has had lots of experience with each other, those happen. And you kind of do want Steph to cut down on those turnovers, but to me, it's just a matter, it's just going to be him. 35 years old, Draymond 34, that's just going to be who they are. You live with it, you die with it, and you just kind of bank on them hitting those notes that you want them to hit. You know, it's frustrating. it's frustrating to see those because you know they can do better. But at mm-hmm. the same time, if they do hit, then they're gonna be a much better team. And so far, I'm still waiting, and a lot of people are still waiting for it to hit collectively. And you know, let's see if it hits, because they've proven in the past that they can do it. It's just that they need to be whole. They need to do things, all the nitty gritty details. They need to do better collectively, not just Steph and not just Draymond, but it starts with them. And if they start doing that, then maybe they have hope.
Steve, did you have Steph, any Steph turnover thoughts? Is it just baked into him, or do you see any kind of discernible difference in what he's seeing on or off the ball?
None for me. I mean, if you're going to be a player of that caliber who makes the kind of passes that he makes, the kind of volume that he has to make decisions, it's part of it. It's going to be part of the game. You would love for it not to happen at certain times. I mean, I'm sure some of the ones where the ball just flies somewhere or pick and roll, he just loses dribble. Not the most fun, but he brings too much to the table to really just be like, hey, man.
Chill out. No, I got you. On the Draymond front, some very obvious things that we can point to in terms of him missing games and a lot of that just being under his own power for why he's missed some of those games. But Joe, I'll start with you. How have you felt about Draymond's play when he's been on the court this year? And how would you compare that to what he looked like last year?
I think the noticeable difference is offensively. As of this moment, I think he's 11 of 24 on threes, and which is pretty low volume, but you kind of bank on him hitting those open shots because he's going to be left open by defense. Defenses still continue to sag off of him. And I think he's been doing a pretty good job picking his spots, going to the rim when the lane is open. When the shot is there, he's taking it, and he hasn't been afraid of taking it either. So, you know, credit to him for improving in that part, which is something that a lot of people have been clamoring for him to do. So, like, you know, he's kind of had his shot, like, I wouldn't say broken, but to the point where he's kind of hesitant to take it because he's not making them. But then you see Draymond be aggressive early on in the season where, you know, Steph's drawing two to the ball, or maybe sometimes even in the limited minutes they have, Chris Paul drawing two to the ball and then passing out to Draymond on the pop. He's actually popping out more this season, I think, like according to the eye test, he's popping out instead of rolling, and he's not hesitating to take those shots. So, you know, credit to him for the offensive aggression, the increased offensive aggression. Defensively, I think like last season, I think there was a bit of a drop off in terms of just the overall athleticism, overall quickness, the speed at which he makes those plays. But you know, the mind's still sharp as it is, as it always has been. You know, like last night he had that 1v3, you know, Draymond in a 1v3, 1v2 situation is always you're always gonna bank on Draymond to make those plays. And I think he's still pretty much the heart of their defensive versatility. And every scheme that they decide to play, it all revolves on what Draymond can do as a roamer, as a point of attack guy, as a help side defender. Even if, you know, even if he's not going to be as athletic anymore, he's not going to be as quick anymore. You know, they've been doing much better with him on the floor, at least from the eye test. The numbers also, like the last time I checked it also, I don't know if the numbers stated, but I think it's safe to say that, you know, with Draymond and a certain combination on the floor, they're going to be much better with him on it. And with Wiggins, with Clay, like I've always said, as much as Steph is the engine of the offense, Draymond is going to be the engine of the defense because he's just so important in terms of communication, in terms of the schemes they play. And, you know, with him being out for 7 games total, 5 due to suspension, you kind of have to caveat their performance on that end. And, you know, now that he's back, but then GP2's going to miss some games. Let's see how much carrying he can do in terms of defensive versatility, in terms of schemes.
Steve, how have you felt about the Draymond experience so far this year?
I mean, he's taking more threes, continues to be aggressive on the roll. I was going to ask about your thoughts on the defense, because it kind of feels like teams are moving him around a little bit more to a degree to lessen some of the impact, where there's a lot of possessions where I'm like, hey, Draymond's on the strong side. Like, hey, I feel like we haven't gotten as many of the what a rotation from Draymond Green.
Yeah.
What a look at the communication from Draymond Green. That's not to say he can't do it anymore. It just hasn't felt the same. And I don't know if that's because of the games where he was in foul trouble or the games where he got ejected, but it just feels different this year. Am I off?
I don't think you're off. Like, I think the point that I was going to make first before you went into that was, like, it does feel like less, quote unquote, event creation from Draymond. Like, you're not seeing the wild steals. You're not seeing the wild rotations at the rim to shut stuff down. And, like, some of that, I think, is offenses moving him around. And I guess going back to last year, you could start to see some of the slippage on the perimeter for him to where it's less 99th percentile and more like 92nd, which is still elite and better than just about everyone else at his position. But you can kind of see, okay, he's not containing drives against point guards to the same degree. Or if he has to clean up two different things, he might get beat on a closeout now. Versus in years prior where he may have to clean up for someone else's mess and you're marveling at how quickly Draymond stopped and kept the ball in front, and now it's a challenge, now it's a forced pickup, and now you're able to get reset. And so, like, it's fewer of those. And for me, and again, part of this is Draymond's fault, for, like, you know, in terms of the suspension, but, like, some of this is just, okay, he hasn't played all of Golden State's games yet. I don't know how much of this is the continuation of actual slippage for him, or he doesn't have his sea legs under him all the way. And then once you factor in, as you mentioned, some foul trouble, and as Joe mentioned, some of the combinations that he's playing with where he may have to do a little bit more than anticipated, or because of who he's playing with, it's, hey, how about we just switch all this stuff to try to limit all the decisions that these other guys got to make? It hasn't felt like the same level of impact for Draymond defensively. I just don't know if that means he's just not as good as it anymore, or if it's just some of the situations that he's been put in so far this year.
I got a question for both of y'all.
What's up?
Do you feel like guys are going at Draymond more than usual?
It feels like a slight uptick, but again, like, I don't know how much of that is we can get Draymond versus Draymond's off balance now because of some other stuff. So I don't know how much to attribute that to him yet, but that's something that is worth keeping an eye on for me.
I think there's also the logic there that if you go at Draymond, especially when they're switching, you got him up out on the perimeter, that means he's not going to be in a position to help on the back line. And so I think teams have been trying to do whatever they can to, like what you said, they're moving him around more. And they're trying to get him out on the perimeter more. Like, hey, you know, maybe it's not the best to go directly at Draymond one-on-one, but at least when you move the ball around, he's not going to be in a position to help because he has to close out. The closeout distance is longer. The help rotation is going to be longer. And so I think you kind of see the gears turning in opposing teams in terms of how can we get Draymond into a position where he's not at his best defensively. And what does he do best defensively is be that roamer and be that help side guy. So yeah, I think there's definitely some merit to what Steve says. It's like, hey, teams are going at Draymond more, not because they want to score against Draymond directly. It's because, hey, he's not going to be in this position to do what he does best.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And then just to quickly bounce off of your earlier point, Joe, about some of the combinations that Draymond's playing with, pulled it up very quickly on PvP stats. With Draymond, Andrew Wiggins, and Klay Thompson on the floor together, 146 minutes, the Warriors have a 126.6 defensive rating, which would easily be the worst in the league. But as you get to some of these splits, with Draymond and Andrew Wiggins on the court without Klay, that defensive rating drops to 109.6, which is an elite mark. When it's Draymond and Klay without Andrew Wiggins, the defensive rating is 100, which once again is an elite mark. And so now the job for me becomes, okay, what exactly is happening with all three of them on the court together? Is this just others getting beat, et cetera? Because, like, even in those minutes, opponents are shooting over 43% from three, which that should regress. How much of that is going to regress, we shall see. So it'd be interesting to dig into. But, like, those are some numbers that were, let's just say, interesting to me that it's that. And naturally, again, because of injuries and things like that, the sample isn't super high. So plenty of time for that to change, but did want to quickly put some numbers on that portion of it. With Andrew Wiggins, again, very cold start to the season for him so far. Career low 12.8 points per game right now, 50% on twos, which is solid, 27% from three, 59% from the line is also very odd. Negative assist turnover ratio right now. Joe, from your view, what is going on with Andrew Wiggins? Is it just I'm not making shots right now, or is there something more inherent, something more structural that you think is kind of leading to the slow start for him?
I think it's more of a, you know, he's not making shots. Like, I don't see anything much different from him in terms of his shot diet, in terms of, you know, his, like, I'm no shot mechanics doctor, but his shot looks fine to me. It's just that they're not going in. He's had, I don't know, like, you know, I hesitate to be like an armchair psychologist, so I'm not going to go there. But it seems like, you know, there's something about the preparation prior to the season that did not go right. And you can attribute that to, you know, his injury at the end of the playoffs, like their playoff run against the Lakers, where he had like the rib issue. And he also had, of course, we all know about the personal problems, and he didn't have much games played last season. But to me, other than that, in terms of how he's taking shots, where in the flow of the offense, I don't think there's anything much different. They're trying to get him going. They were trying to get him going, like, you know, the head tap where they usually have a set a cross screen for him to get post-ups, isolations. They're trying to limit his, like, I would say, his self-creation flashes where he doesn't have to dribble. He doesn't have to isolate. They're trying to get him to his spots. It's just a matter of him hitting it. And we saw that. We saw that last night in the first half where, you know, the flow in terms of his shots, in terms of where he's getting to his spots, it felt much better. And, you know, the effort was always there. That's why I pushed back on people saying, oh, this is Minnesota Wiggins. This is him not showing the kind of effort that he can show, because he's been showing the effort. He's been crashing the boards. He's been doing all the other things on the floor that you want him to do when the shot isn't falling. Mm-hmm. He's been making himself a presence, and, you know, but, you know, the shot just hasn't been there, and it's been showing in his impact metrics, his on and off metrics. And, you know, there's no denying that it's been damaging to them, but you can't knock him for a lack of effort to me. So, you know, he's trending up, so, and his shots are falling in. So I think it's just a matter of time for him. And they play much better when Andrew Wiggins is much better. And, you know, if he can keep it up the next few games, then maybe they have something going there.
Got you. I have a quick number on that. But before I get into that, Steve, have you seen anything different from Andrew Wiggins, or are you with Joe that it feels just like he has to knock down shots? And that's just kind of what it is.
The beauty of Warriors Wiggins, per se, is that he made shots. Catch and shoot threes were a part of it. That's what he did. It fit right into Golden State. He shot, what, 42% on catch and shoot threes last year? I was trying to get my little basic stats together before you threw it to me, but you threw it to me quick.
Oh, my bad. My fault.
No, you good. It's good. But he's shooting what, like 28.9% on catch and shoot threes this year? That's going to make a difference. And he's shooting what, 24.5% on above the break threes? That's going to make a difference. The finishing, I think, is still there when he gets in the paint. But I think it's a confidence deal. The post-ups don't feel the same. The drives don't feel the same. But I feel like that's more just I'm trying to get right, mm-hmm, while also doing what we do. Mid-range feels off. That's probably the one for me where it's like, hey, you making 35% of those, bud? Is that your game? Like, is that what you do?
I think if there's going to be any credence to, like, the Minnesota Wiggins portion of it, it's probably going to be the mid-range play for Andrew Wiggins. And that if he isn't getting some of the easier ones, and he does have to self-create a little bit more, that's historically been the types of shots that he's been able to create for himself. And those shots haven't gone in at a high rate for most of his career. And so, like, maybe that very specific portion is where you get into it. The only other thing that I was going to toss out as I was quickly looking this up, Golden State was 15th in transition frequency last year. Mm. They are 29th as of recording right now.
So it's Chris Paul's fault.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I set you up for that one.
Yeah, you did, bud. Lob me.
Excuse me, 28th, not 29th. But yeah, I threw you the lob. Great job. But my overarching point is going to, like, maybe that's part of the formula to getting Andrew Wiggins going earlier in games. If you're able to get stops, and you're able to run more than you have been, you get some of the rim attempts for Andrew Wiggins when it's a 3-on-2, a 3-on-1. Let him see the ball go in the basket a little bit earlier. You maybe get an early free throw attempt there. Maybe that's where you can get more comfort and rhythm with some of those catch-and-shoot attempts that he isn't making right now. The fact that Golden State isn't getting stops or forcing turnovers to the same degree, they're not getting out and running. You factor in, you know, I'm not going to go all the way on Steve's side, but you factor in when Chris falls on the floor, you do typically play slower. It does feel like Andrew Wiggins is having to do a little bit more in the half court. And if you don't have someone that's consistently drawing two for Andrew Wiggins, like that was also part of the beauty of the best version of Andrew Wiggins we saw. Because we saw, you know, particularly with the playoff run, like Clay was back in rhythm, like second half of the year. Steph Curry remained awesome. You had more consistent two to the ball. Andrew Wiggins got to attack until the defense all the time. There are so many actions being ran for Golden State where the only shooter on the left side of the floor is Andrew Wiggins. You can tag this or try to help, or you can stick with Andrew Wiggins and give up something at the rim. And like right now, it feels slower. Depending on who's in the lineup, you have more help points. So you don't have the same, you don't have the same avenues to get all the way to the paint. And some of that's just going to be inherent with, if we have Kevon Looney and Draymond Green on the floor, if they're not directly involved in a handoff or directly involved in a post split, yeah, we're going to sag off. And that helps, that hurts Andrew Wiggins on the second side. So like some of that also factors in. I guess like 90% he'll just make shots. The only other thing that gives me pause though is the defense. And we've talked about that already, so it won't hang too far there. But that's where it's just like, okay, it ain't just that. Because if Andrew Wiggins was defending at the same level he was like last year or the year before last, and then it was just he's missing shots, I probably don't have anything to say about Andrew Wiggins. You just wait for him to make shots. The fact that it's that and not as physical off the ball. We're seeing more of the off-ball lapses that we saw in Minnesota pop up now. The containment isn't the same. And you're also not making shots. And you're also tapping into the mid-range bag a little bit more. Oh, wait, Andrew Wiggins isn't closing tonight. That's where it's just like, wait a minute. Let's press pause. What exactly is going on with this? Because it can't be all of these things at the same time. Again, it's November, so like I don't think Andrew Wiggins is done or anything like that. But it's been weird. And so I just kind of want to see where you two were at with him.
Well, I'll ask, is that just not the theme of the Warriors right now? Hey, this is the last thing we can have happen. Everyone's doing the last thing that we can have happen right now. Andrew Wiggins, restricted area shooting is down, mid-range is down, threes are down. Oh, no. Klay didn't make a shot for a week. Everyone said he was buns. He's back. Just leave that man alone. Oh, no. We are injured. Oh, no. Draymond. Oh, no. Like, is that just the whole theme of the Warriors season? Write down everything that can't happen, and let's just do it intermittently during the first 20 games.
Like, imagine the worst-case scenario that could happen for the Warriors, and 18 games in, it's pretty much happening.
Which, I guess, if we're going there, let's explore it a little bit. If this is the case, and just everything wrong that could happen with this Warriors season so far has happened, it's kind of encouraging that they're only two games under 500, and no? Especially when you factor in the schedule. Like, if this is the worst that it can get, and y'all are still in the play-in right now, that's a way to look at it.
You know what? Before we move on, since you did that, I'm going to do the old man Steve, hey, the Warriors might have a chance thing that I've had to do on this podcast for what feels like three straight years, except for when they won. Then you was like, nah, they good. Klay going to shoot better. Kuminga's played well. Dario's been pretty darn good, except for with those games when he can't switch and teams switch against him. And it's like, hey. wait. Now what are we doing? Moses Moody's been good. And I got a hot take. Okay. Maybe some of these injuries will help them find the people they just need to play.
That's fair.
Could happen. Which, boy, they need to figure that out.
There's my elevator pitch. And Steph Curry's averaging 30.
That guy seems to be really good at basketball. What can I say? Actually, let's go into some of the role players as the second unit while we're there. A lot of conversation after the Kings lost last night because of what Moses Moody did in the fourth quarter. And then notably, we did not see Moses Moody after doing what he did. What does he have to do to get more playing time? Is there a specific thing that he can do? It's like he was in the rotation, then he kind of wasn't, then he was back in. It's like, oh, wait, we got injuries. You're starting, and then he's just firmly coming off the bench, and then now we have this. Like, is there a, I guess for you, Joe, as someone that falls like the actual rotations decisions a little bit closer, what's kind of the box that has to be checked that you've kind of noticed with Moses?
That's a good question. Honestly, I have no, like, I can't see anything that he could do much better to be on the floor. You know, like, you know, in terms of the defense, like, sure, the point of attack stuff is kind of up and down for him, but it's been trending up lately. Like, he had good reps last night against De'Aaron Fox, and you know, where he can be a switchable asset to 1 through 4. And to add to that fact, he's been knocking down his shots at a pretty high rate this season. And he had some big shots down the stretch late last night. And so to me, like, you know, I don't want to presume the, like, what the coaching staff is thinking. I don't want to assume, like, hey, they're making this mistake or they're not making this, they're not doing this enough. But to me, from where I'm sitting, it's just that what else can he do to prove that, you know, he's ready for the rotation minutes that he should be getting right now? And, you know, I get the reasoning behind, you know, like what Steve Kerr said, like, you know, we subbed him out because of defense. We needed Andrew Wiggins. We needed Klay Thompson there. I get that. It's just that, you know, he was on a heater last night, and in a game where they had struggles getting offense beyond Steph because Mike Brown was blitzing him as soon as he crossed half court, you kind of need everyone all hands on deck. And the hottest hand on deck was on the bench late last night. So you kind of can't help but say, like, why? Like, what was the reasoning behind that? And, you know, there's also the fact where, you know, people are saying, like, okay, you don't bench Moody. Should you have taken out for him at late game? And a lot of people like naturally gravitate toward Klay. And to me, I also disagree with that notion. It's because, you know, you need Klay out there because Steph is going to get doubled and Klay is going to be there to punish those doubles and those blitzes. And to me, there's also the missed opportunity last night was slotting Draymond in at the five and just, you know, leaning into playing small, playing speedy, and having Draymond out there as the guy putting pressure along with Steph on Domantas Sabonis, for example. And now you're kind of involving Domas in actions where he has to hedge out or he has to double. And now you have Draymond in the short role with, you know, Klay, Wiggins, and Moody around you. And so I think that was where the missed opportunity was last night, where you lean into your strength, you lean into what made you good all these years, which is to go small, go into a version of the death lineup. You know, I don't know how much death they can inflict with that lineup, but it's the closest thing they have to a small ball death lineup with Wiggins and Moody and Klay spacing. And to me, I think that's something they can take, like a lesson that they can take, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll do it more often from now on. But I think it's fair to question the decision to bench Moody while also saying, I don't think you should have benched Klay. You should have benched maybe Kevon Looney and go small.
A, he called them the cramp lineup. That's kind of tough. B, I think I always want to say the Looney thing was Sabonis related, but that's okay. We don't have to dive too deep into that part.
Yeah, that's fair.
To Moses Moody's part, I think that he has earned more trust from the coaching staff. I think he's produced in a way that you wanted him to. Clear runway, making shots, the decisions feel better, doesn't feel as forced. It's not as many, hey, why'd you do that plays, right? Mm-hmm. I think the problem for him is more, Doug, we don't know what makes us great outside of these five guys. And I think he's a victim of that. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to what I asked earlier. Hey, what's their best lineup? What's their second best lineup? Mm-hmm. And so I think in a scenario where we're not right, we're trying to compete, we're trying to win, there's a lot of just leaning on what I know. And so I know what these five are going to do. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Who, like, what is the next best combination for them? I'll ask that to y'all.
Well, the cramp lineup is wild, first and foremost. but two, way to go full circle. This is the fun of these kind of team dives. We go right back to question one from like 40 minutes ago. It's great. But I think I would be intrigued with the smaller group. Like if it is Steph, Clay, Moody, Wiggins, and Dre, especially if it is the like the rebounding version of Andrew Wiggins. Like I think that's probably your best bet at, you know, a successful small ball lineup for Golden State right now. Because otherwise, you're just missing something. Like, if it's Chris Paul, like, I think Chris Paul's better than Moses Moody, but he's also just much smaller. That hurts the switchability, hurts the rebounding, et cetera, et cetera. And then cycling through other guys, like Gary Payton II, again, probably going to miss a little bit of time, helps your defense, can help your rebounding. Oh, they're going to help off of him, too. Like, I don't know. Yeah. So, it's, I think Moody's included there. And just to circle back a little bit, like I framed the question that way in terms of like what boxes you think the coaching staff may want him to check, just because like I have Detroit in the back of my mind where like the early Jaden Ivey stuff is like, well, you could probably disagree. And I think I know Steve did. And like, I was like, I probably felt like it was too far, even as the Killian Hayes fan. But it's like, okay, I at least know, I can at least kind of surmise, all right, this is the box they won't check with Jaden Ivey. It seems very clear it is the defense, whether you agree or not. At least I see the logic behind what you're thinking. And so for Moody, it was just like, I asked you that way because I was like, okay, I don't really know what it is. Because to Steve's point, and this is something that he pointed out on the pod earlier, like decision-making has gotten better for him. Defense, especially like off the ball, like that seems solid. To the shooting point Joe brought up, like he's shooting 38% from three this year. That's a career high for him. Career high from three, career high volume. Career high in rebounding, he's nearly doubled that from last year. So it's like, okay, it feels like he's doing the things. Is it just, hey, our starters ain't got it right now. We need to figure this out because that's what's going to matter in April and May. And you just got to chill for a little bit. If that's the answer, I get it. But in light of, again, and like to Joe's point, like maybe the answer wasn't bench Clay last night. But I think when you zoom out, like, okay, well, Clay is the guy in the court that doesn't have the contract. Like maybe within that lens, okay, it may be worth exploring. Hey, can Moses actually close with this group? What does that actually look like? So if we do have to press that button at the end of the year, we at least feel comfortable with him moving into it. Like maybe that's a part where I'm just like, that could be a consideration. Or maybe it is a consideration they just still bank on no, which is fine. And I would understand that. But, like, that's something that's kind of come to mind for me. I don't know. Like, Moses just seems much better than he was last year. Especially when he's hitting the type of shots that he was hitting last. Like, watching him and Sasha Vezenkov just go back and forth. Like, it was the Tim Hardaway Jr. Dion Waiters thing from the rookie sophomore game all those years ago. It's like, oh, they're just trading pull-up threes. This is neat. How about that? I didn't have that on the bingo card. This is fun. Also, yeah, Sasha just dribbled last night. That's cool. Anyway, we're not talking about the Kings. Yeah, the Moses stuff has been weird in terms of the playing time. He seems better. The Jonathan Kuminga portion is what's really thrown me off with the bench this year. Because I was really expecting a step up from him on both ends. And, like, we've gotten spurts of it, but that's also just kind of been the Jonathan Kuminga story so far in his career. We've gotten spurts of it. Like, very early on is, hey, why is this dude playing? Why aren't you getting him reps? Then you give him reps. It's like, hey, see, this is why you play him. And, like, a quarter later, it's like, oh, that's why he's not just getting 24 minutes a night. That makes sense. Shots aren't falling. What is this foul? Where is he going off the ball defense? Like, I just expected more for Jonathan Kuminga. And now I think in light of, like, Wiggins just being back, obviously Clay's not going anywhere. You see the steps that Moses Moody is taking. Is it dramatic to say, like, this feels kind of like the final frontier with Kuminga with this specific group? And I say that within the lens of, like, really establishing you are going to be the seventh man in this rotation now. Because they do have vets that they can cycle in. And it seems very clear, like, it's one or the other in terms of him or Moody playing. Not saying that I agree with that. But, like, in terms of how the rotation's kind of shaken out, it feels like it's one or the other, especially once you get late in games. With GP2 out now, Like, is this the opportunity for him to kind of snatch that and just prove he could be a solid, consistent two-way contributor?
Yeah, like, with JK, there's always been this balance of, you know, is he making the most out of the spots he's been put in versus, or is the team, is the coaching staff doing enough to put him in the spots he needs to succeed? And, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, like, he's, like you see a second unit possessions where he's just chilling in the corner or on the weak side wing or slot, and he's practically just being a spot-up shooter. And defenses are going to treat him like a non-shooter, and they're going to be sending over extra help from the weak side to help on whatever's happening on the other side, on the strong side. And to me, I think that's where you kind of count on him to have the instinct to know how to be useful when defenses are kind of not paying attention to you, you know, whether that's cutting 45 from the slot or maybe setting a screen for someone on in the corner. And I think that's where he's kind of like been hit or miss, where you see flashes of him kind of like processing and kind of figuring things out. But then you also get these moments where he's just chilling and he doesn't know what to do. And then when he does actually decide, oh, I should be doing this, it's like 8-5 seconds left on the shot clock, and he's kind of forced to make a decision right then and there. Do I pull up or do I drive in? And then when he pulls up, the shot's not really been there, as opposed to the preseason. And then when he does decide to put the ball on the floor, it's either a turnover because he's, you know, the handle's not really there, or he crashes into someone and it's an offensive foul. And, you know, there's just this thing with him where, you know, is it a matter of fit? Is it a matter of him not really taking the initiative, or taking the initiative but making the wrong decisions? To me, I think, you know, it's year three of Jonathan Kuminga, and, you know, there has to be some sort of palpable improvement in terms of the decision making, in terms of how he wants to be useful on offense. And I don't know, like, there has to be some decision made in terms of, how does the team really want to use Kuminga? Hmm. Like, are they fine with him just being that guy doing whatever? Or do they really want him to be something more? And if they want him to be something more, then I think there has to be questions, like viable questions made in terms of how they're going to fit him in and how they're going to use him and if they really want him to be there in the first place.
Got you. And just to quickly clarify, when I say like final frontier, I kind of zoom out to, if Golden State wants to make a move, like, he's probably going to be the young piece that they include with whatever salary to do that. Not saying Kuminga's a bust, he's a bad NBA player, anything like that. I hope that was clear when I first brought that up, but, like, just to clarify, that is more so what I mean.
Too late. You said it's the final countdown. Oops.
Gosh darn it. So just wanted to throw that out there first. But Steve, what have you seen from Jonathan Kuminga?
I think to your original question, he may just be a victim of what position can we put you in? We're not really going that small. So, okay, that kind of takes some of that off the table. We have Dario, who could play five, could play four. If we play him at the four, hey, bud, that's some of your minutes. Mm-hmm. Three, can he play the three? What do y'all think?
I worry about the shooting in that regard.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that takes some of that.
Yeah.
Some nights you're going to get 20, some nights you're going to get 12. And I feel like he's kind of in that box right now. Like, the finishing has been really good. I feel like the, like, in the restricted areas has been really good. The paint stuff, it's been kind of weird. Like, I know it's basic, but shooting 33% in the paint, like, non-restricted area, hey, no. But the mid-range is there when he takes and makes the right shot. So I think it's less, like, I think those young guys are in. It's more situational for them. Mm-hmm. And so I think with Kuminga, he's going to have a runway. It's on him to not only showcase the aggression and the potential, but also, okay, can we trust you in these certain scenarios? I think that's growing. Like, I feel like the defense has been fine. I feel like he's a part of the rotation. I just think there's so many dudes that they can put in. It's mm-hmm. like, are we going to go GP2? Are we going to go Dario? Are we going to go this way? And now it's just kind of like, okay, we might need this. I feel like that's where he's at. But it does feel better for both of those young guys, in my opinion. At least it feels like there's more of a clear, you're going to get a run, maybe a second one, as opposed to, hey, bud, you just...
We don't know if you're playing.
It's good. Go ahead and sit over there, bud.
Oh, I feel that. Like, I think, too, just like the vet point, like, again, with Dario, with GB2, not only do they both oscillate between the four and the five, more so the four for GP2, obviously. Like, it also kind of goes into, like, Steve Kerr, he trusts the vets more than he generally trusts the young guys, which I don't think that's inherently bad, especially once you think about how Golden State plays on both ends and decisions that need to be made on the fly. Like, yeah, if it comes down to GP2 at the four or Jonathan Kuminga at the four late in the game, like, he's probably going to trust GP2 a little bit more to make those snappier decisions if he's operating in a short role or just take on some of those tougher on-ball assignments on the other end. That makes sense to me. And with Dario, who could play the five or the four, like, that spacing is just going to be more important for what they're trying to open up, especially when Steph isn't on the floor. So he's just kind of in a tough spot, which, again, that kind of circles into, like, me asking, especially with GP2 being out now. Like, it does feel like a lot of those backup 4 minutes or more of those backup 4 minutes can go to him now. Because it does seem pretty clear over the last couple of years, like, Golden State hasn't felt super comfortable playing him at the three. It's like, okay, is this the opportunity to just really snatch it? And it's like, okay, we know he's in, period. And now it's just getting better. Because I feel like if this is a shaky stretch for him and Golden State enters, like, again, like late December, January, or whatever the case may be, and they're still a 500 club, you start to get into some of the bigger, how do we salvage this season? Or is this worth salvaging this season? Let's check out the trade deadline. Let's search around and see who's open on the trade market. And if we get into, like, we can talk about the star class very briefly. Like, LaVine was loosely linked to Golden State. Pascal's been loosely linked to Golden State. Like, I don't know how real that is. I'm not a guy with sources. But, like, if you do get into some of those, like, star level or just big salary guys, it's likely going to be, like, the Chris Paul expiring plus a young guy or two. And if Kuminga can't just firmly snatch rotation time or prove that he is just a part of the core moving forward, like, I do feel like he's going to wind up being the odd man out. Between what we've seen from Moody this year, the early returns on pods, which we could talk about him a little bit if you'd like, it just feels like he's probably third in that hierarchy in terms of who they trust to really, again, just snatch that playing time and just snatch that role moving forward. And so that's where my eyes kind of go to, hey, how firm is this with Jonathan Kuminga? Again, nothing about how good he's going to be, period. It's way too early, I think, to make that kind of decision before this Golden State group, because they have so many big decisions coming down the line over the next year or two. It just feels a little bit uneasy for me. So I do hope we see a better version of Kuminga moving forward. I guess I'll ask you very quickly, Joe, on the rookies, from Pods, from Chase Jackson Davis, is there room at all for them to play more? Or just in general, like, what have you seen from them? What have you liked from them?
I think there is room for them to play, especially with Pods, because, you know, Pods is someone who, you know, like, you know, like, it's a general sentiment, but he's an energy guy. He's someone who you can just plug in. He knows he can run the offense. He can score in spots, and, you know, he's just, for someone of his age, he just knows what to do. He's a player, you know, to use what, like, the general term, he is a player. And, you know, like, to me, I think Pods is a legit rotation member right now. It's just that he's also a victim of that rotation, of those rotation decisions where you decide, I have CP3 on my team. I have, sure, Corey Joseph on my team. There's a, like, you can go down that hole. Like,
what can we?
Like, the mindset from the coaching staff, especially when you saw it last night, was Corey Joseph is a low risk, low turnover option. And in a game where we don't want to turn the ball over, we want Corey Joseph in. And, you know, Pods, you want to see what Pods can do in those situations. It's just that he's going to have a lot going against them in terms of this dude is in front of me, or this dude is a vet, and you know, maybe we're not going to rely on you just yet because you need to show more in terms of can you run the offense by yourself, which he has shown in the past. You know, he's a good passer. He can make those reads, especially when he breaks the paint. I've watched it a lot during summer league, and I didn't know how real that was until he started doing it in the big leagues. And so he has this uncanny ability to break the paint, to get to the rim. And, you know, unlike Dante DiVincenzo last season, when he does get to the rim, you know, even like the layups have been hit or miss, but he's willing to take them. He's willing to go to the paint. He's willing to take those floaters. He's willing to make those tough finishes when he's up close. And also the three-point shooting, like he's been billed as this like elite shooter from college, and the shot hasn't really been there yet, but you kind of have the faith that he's going to get there at some point of his career. And so you kind of do want to see what he has in terms of, hey, is this shot for real, or is this shot going to go in? And we need more playmaking on the floor, and he does provide that. And with the added ability to get to the paint, which is someone like not a Corey Joseph can do, at this point of his career, maybe not something that he can do consistently in terms of Chris Paul. And hey, we've got a young guy that can do it consistently, and he's a rookie. And so you kind of just go, maybe we do need to play him more. But also, there's also those rotation decisions and the depth issue where we have a lot of options in front of him.
Oh, man, so many bets. Actually, you sparked something as you mentioned the paint touches. And like, yes, I wholeheartedly agree. Like the paint touch thing is not something that Chris Paul does at this stage of his career. That has been it's been a thing for a minute now. God bless him. On the paint thing, every time I look at Golden State numbers or just league-wide numbers in terms of like, you know, rim rate, rim share, all the good stuff, offensively or defensively, here are the Golden State Warriors, because they track things so differently in terms of what's a rim shot versus what's a paint shot. They just skew everything. And so I just wanted to quickly ask, do you know exactly what they are measuring differently? Like, that's a genuine question. I ain't trying to get anybody in trouble. But it's just like I know it's like I've seen enough people say like that's the reason why the numbers end up looking so much differently, like specifically at the rim. I didn't know what the literal thing it is. Is it like takeoff point or whatever? Like, I just had that in my mind.
I honestly have no idea.
Yeah. So I don't know. We had a Warriors guy on. I just wanted to see if you knew what the
I don't know. Like to me, as long as you touch the paint, it's a paint touch. Like, I don't know how they track it. I don't know how Second Spectrum does. I don't have the Second Spectrum hookup. I mean, you do. So.
Oh, what is blood cooking? Get cooked.
Get cooked. That's crazy. No cooking being done. I was genuinely curious on that front. And then with TJD, like, he's looked good in the minutes that I've seen him, but there also just haven't been that many minutes. And as we've kind of cycled through all of the front court options that Golden State has, like, it does kind of make sense why we haven't seen much of him. But what have been your early impressions of him so far?
The limited minutes he's been in, he's played his role. Like, you know, you want a guy who can set those screens, who can roll to the rim, provide a bit of roll gravity to get those corner shooters open. He's done pretty much what you want him to do. Of course, you know, there's going to be those spots where he's a rookie. He's showing that he's a rookie, where he's going to foul one-on-one in the post, you know, when, especially against Jokic in the Denver game. And, you know, don't take anything much from that, because, you know, Jokic is Jokic and he's a rookie. And those are lessons that he's going to learn as he gains more experience in the league. And to me, it's interesting too, that when you think about it, he's pretty much the only guy on the roster for the Warriors who's a legit role lob threat. But then at the same time, they haven't really maximized that potential. You know, I was kind of expecting Chris Paul to do it, but I think just, you know, in the flow of the offense, he's not getting much opportunity to be that guy to roll to the rim and get those lobs. And, you know, and also with the rotation problem again, we're going there again. I don't know how much opportunity he's going to get to be in those spots. And to the point where I also want to insert the Dario four at the four versus the five thing, where I think there is an opportunity for him to be kind of like a second unit mainstay if they lean into Dario at the 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I think Steve wants Dario to be at the five because, you know, at the five, they kind of bank on running those delay actions, those elbow actions through their five man. And Dario happens to be that guy on the roster who, you know, can be that delay man who can make those decisions at the elbows and see those open cutters, while also, you know, the guy defending him has to guard him up close because he can shoot the ball. So I kind of get that line of thought, but I also do want to see how much they can get out of someone like TJD at the five and Dario at the four, which, to be fair, they've tried out and the numbers have looked great, especially defensively with Dario at the four and whoever one of TJD, Looney, and Draymond is next to him. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's something they can explore further. I think that frees Dario up to be more of an offensive guy because he doesn't have to do that much on defense. He doesn't have to be defend in space. He doesn't have to be put in a pick and roll that often. And TJD, you know, I think his pick and roll defense has been pretty decent, especially in drop where, you know, you don't expect a lot of rookies to have that kind of awareness in drop coverage. And he's been doing pretty good. And I think that has a lot to do with him gaining the experience in college, maybe. But, you know, whatever it is, he's been pretty good at that. And so I kind of want to lean more into TJD Dario lineups, two big lineups, and maybe put him in more pick and roll situations where they can make better use of his roll gravity.
Okay. Last question I have for you, well, I guess technically for the both of you before we close this thing out, because we've talked about rotation decisions, stuff like that. For Joe, who you have, again, you have a better pulse on like the Golden State fan base and media than I do. Are folks overreacting to Steve Kerr's season this year? Or is there like legitimate castination to be had here?
I think the answer is always going to be somewhere in between where, you know, you kind of look at what people have thought of Steve Kerr over the years in the Warriors fan base and you kind of take it with a grain of salt because, yeah, there's legit beef there in terms of how he's been using people like Steph, how the rotation decisions, like, and the minutes distribution. And there is a logic to that kind of, I don't know, madness, we would call it, where he's kind of looking for rotations. He's kind of looking for combinations. And those are legit. Those are legit reasons behind him doing the things that he's doing in terms of the decisions on who to put in, who to take out, etc. But also at the same time, you kind of want him to do better. Like, I think it's entirely fair to say that he can be better this season. And that's just not limited to him. I mean, across the board, everyone can be better on the team. But of course, you know, who the coach is going to be the one, the first in the firing line, so to speak. He's going to be the head of the snake. And whoever's going to, like, all the troubles of the team, he's going to be the one who's taking it. And to me, I think it's totally fair to criticize them on some of the decisions. I think I criticized them for taking Moody out last night. I mean, I don't think that's a decision I agreed with. I'm sure he had his reasons, and there is legitimacy to those reasons. And I think for me, it's just, you know, just ease up a bit, I would say. You know, mm-hmm. It's fair to criticize him, but also it's not just all on him. Like what we've touched on upon this season, where they're just, they don't have everyone, and they're not going to have everyone again because who knows what will happen to GP2 and CP. And it's those things that are out of his control that you can't really rag on him. And, you know, like, I think you should give them more leeway, give them more time to see where they're heading with this roster, with this team. And, you know, maybe like he's in a contract year and he didn't get an extension. So, you know, I think it's fair to just let it ride, let him ride the rest of the season and take it from there. I think he's earned that, you know, over the years, like the body of work that he's had with this team where he's brought them. I think he's earned the right to ride the season out and then see where they go from there. And that's just where I'm at right now.
I was going to say, if multiple championships don't allow you to finish the, if that doesn't earn you the right to finish the season, like, I don't know what the bar is at a certain point. Yeah, I think, this is something that Steve and I have talked about quite a bit. Like, I don't feel like people really factor in everything that coaches have to parse through. In addition to the very obvious reality that a lot of, we aren't in the locker room. We aren't in the coaching's meetings. We don't know what goes into a lot of these decisions. So, like, there's going to be that, just that inherent blind spot to where we can't just turn the volume down on some of the criticisms across the board, not just with Golden State, but across the board, because we're operating at an information deficit. With Steve, like, I just feel like there have been so many questions about, you know, going back to the top of the discussion that we had, like striking the on-ball, off-ball balance with Steph, and thus just the balance of what we're trying to run in general. That I do wonder, like, with a season like this, like, how much of that criticism is fair now? Like, how much do you put on him? As we talk about some of the slow starts these players are having, like, how much of it is just the players and how much of it is, well, they're trying to find their rhythm within this system. That might not be the answer right now. Not to go away from it completely, but, like, again, like, that's a question that I have. And why, again, I wanted to ask you, as someone that's closer to this, like, how do you feel about it? Because, like, ultimately, I think it's easy to see why he has established the base that he has with Steph. They've won multiple championships. Steph's won an MVP in this system. It's hard to say that it didn't work or that it doesn't work. And, like, even with, you know, with the cold start to Clay in particular, you got him off ball or using him and Steph together, like, you're still creating wild advantages with those two. And so it's not like, even when the results aren't there, like, the process isn't sound. But, like, there's still enough that you can kind of point to. You mentioned the rotation stuff. We talked at length about the Moses Moody thing. Talked about Jonathan Kuminga thing. Like, there are different decisions that can be made, sure. Like, I don't know if I'm completely on the get Kerr out of here train that a lot of folks seem to be on. But I'm also not in the fan base, so, like, maybe I'd feel differently if I was. I don't know. I just want to see where you were with that. Steve, did you have any Kerr thoughts before we close it out?
No, not really. I mean, I think he's been pretty steady on, hey, we need to take care of the ball. We need to stop fouling. I think he knows what they need to do. I think it's very easy to poke at him, especially if you are someone who wants more young guys to play, or if you're someone who thinks this team is done, it's probably just very easy to point Steve Kerr and be like, hey, what are you doing? But I think it's just about steadying the ship, riding the course, and sticking with it, to me. I think the thing with coaching is I don't think people know, like, hey, we're aware that this stinks. We talk about it all the time. We just don't tell y'all. So all y'all get is the press conference, and then that's it. And it's like, you don't see, like, the anguish and frustration of, like, hey, good Lord, how do we get us out of this? Like, there's a lot more thought that goes into it, but we're running out of time.
Fair enough. Literal last question I have for you, Joe. Where can the people find you, and where can they find your work?
You can find me at Golden State of Mind. You can find me at my Twitter, at Joe Virai NBA. I write about, you know, except for last night, I write about the games. Every single game I write, there's going to be an analysis on whatever happened the night before. You know, I do film work on Twitter. I post a lot of clips. That's pretty much all I do on Twitter nowadays, except for the random guy who, you know, just wants to engage with me, and I'm willing to engage with people, like an honest basketball discussion. And yeah, it's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, there we go. Follow Joe. We'll make sure we have the info in the podcast description. Steve, closing thoughts.
Follow that man. Follow him. He's going to get you better. You're going to learn about the game. You're going to learn about the Warriors. Just follow him. I have two closing thoughts. Okay. Number one, how the bleep did we not talk about Chris Paul?
We talked about the
scam. Scam, scam, scam.
Scam.
Shame. Number two, did you have this pod now because of how the Warriors played, or because the 49ers play the Eagles this weekend and thus you wouldn't be able to do the pod if the Eagles were to lose.
All I'm going to say is we're going to have a healthy quarterback this time. So,
big bars! Cooked him!
Well, God bless you. Best of luck. Hope you win the Super Bowl on Sunday. We shall see. For the Chris Paul point, let the record show. And yeah, you can check this on YouTube if you would like. I brought up Chris Paul and the three-point shooting perking up yesterday. And Steve hit me with the, what is this bozo talking about? I ain't forget. We brought up Chris Paul in conversation about the defense, about his, you know, his relation with Steph and the pick and roll and the off-ball volume. We brought him in. But while we're here, we can very quickly note. we can very quickly note. Chris Paul averaging 9.7 assists, 46% on twos, 33% on threes, but he is shooting three ball better as of late. A steal and a half per game. Golden State is plus 59 with Steph and Chris Paul on the floor together. A slightly positive net rating with Chris Paul on the floor and Steph off. He's been solid. There are defensive concerns. A lot of his pick and rolls are being turned into switches. I have second spectrum datum on that. But I don't want to bore you. We're at the end of the pod. But more of those turned into switches in terms of just overall pick and roll efficiency, you know, Warriors possession featuring a Chris Paul pick and roll. Those numbers are not great right now. And a lot of that is baked into the switching problem that he's seeing with a lot of those ball screens. But beyond that, hope to see Chris Paul's all right. He did get hurt during the Kings game, so we will see. We will have more Chris Paul commentary on this podcast. I can assure you of that. So there you go. And Joe, best of luck on Sunday. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Thunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Thunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our Thunker Spot online watch parties, live analysis, great vibes, some antics, some real talk. You get a little bit of everything in these watch parties. So if you have a League Pass subscription, or if you're watching television by yourself on your laptop or whatever, you want to sync it up with us and chat with us and have some fun, please do that. The link should be in the podcast description. If it's hyperlinked, just click on that link, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If for some reason it's not hyperlinked with the app that you're listening to this podcast on, just copy and paste that link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all on Tuesday.
My man attaches, he's shooting better every time he says 32.8%.